We're holding on Chaf Zayin on the day's last line. We're continuing on the Tanoim and Amoraim, where people ask them what in what schus they lived law. So Shaul Talmidim Rav Preda, the Meher Rachti Yamin, Rav Preda's Talmidim asked him, in what schus did you live long? Now, Tosfos says this seems to be the same Rav Preda as we have the famous story in Eruvin, where he had a Talmud who he would have to teach everything 400 times. And then one time the Talmud was distracted and he had to teach him another 400 times, so that Abascal finally, eventually, once he did that, then Abascal came out and said, do you want that everybody in your generation should be Zeichat Olam Haba, or that you yourself should live 400 years? And he says, I'd rather that my generation should have the Zchus. And so he was told that he'll have both. So in that case, so the answer would be that he was Zeichat a long life because of that, because he taught that Talmud 400 times. But here the Gemara is going to give a different answer. He's going to give other things. So Tosfos says, okay, what it is originally, he didn't know to begin with that when it says that Abascal came out, maybe it means that he didn't himself know. So eventually, when it said that in Shemayim it was decided, let him have both, Reb Preda may not have known at that time that it was both. He thought, okay, I asked for Olam Haba for everybody in the generation, so that's what I got. He didn't realize until much later that when he himself had lived 400 years, then he realized that it was in the schus of that. But meanwhile, in between, they asked him once, why and in what schus did you live so long? And then he gave the answers that we're going to give in our Gemara over here. But Tosfos and Eruvin says also, you could say that there's all the factors that we're going to say over here, plus the schus of teaching that time. So anyway, Omalahem, so he answers them, Miyamai Lakidmani Adum Bais Medrash. Nobody ever came before me to the Bais Medrash. I was always the first one there. Veloy Beirachti Lifnei Kohen. I never said a brocha in front of a Kohen, so before a Kohen. So Rashi says we're talking about by benching, that he wouldn't be the one to lead benching, he would lead for the Kohen to do, which we'll talk about in a second, whether that was the appropriate thing, whether when that's appropriate and when not. We'll get back to that in a moment. And number three, I never ate meat from an animal where the matonos, the zroil, the chayayim, the keva, had not previously been taken off and given to the kohen. Now, what's so special about that last one? As in fact, Rabbi Yitzchok says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan that you're not allowed to eat meat from such an animal before you took out the matonos. And furthermore, Rabbi Yitzchok said, a person who eats meat from an animal before the matonis were taken off is as if he's eating tevel. Because the same way you have with grain, let's say, before you give truma and meiser to the various people that it's supposed to, it's tevel. The same way the animal, Rabbi Yitzchok is saying, before you take out the matonis, it's considered tevel. However, the Gemara says, the halacha is not in fact like him. You are allowed to eat meat from the animal before the matonis were taken off. For one thing, because the matonis are a specific part of the animal. Unlike, for example, truma and meiser, where, or challah from dough and so forth, where any particular piece of grain, any particular grain of wheat or any particular bit of dough could end up being part of the challah with zroi l'chayayim v'keva. It's not so. The Torah defines certain parts of the animal, a certain part of the leg, a certain part of the jaws and tongue and whatever, and so forth. That is what you give to the kohen. So therefore, it's not really like tevel at all, and therefore the halacha is not like Rabbi Yitzchok. You are allowed to eat meat from an animal before those were taken out. Another point Rishonim say is that after all, these matonis are really considered chulin. You have a mitzvah to give them to the kohen, and if you don't, then you're stealing from Shevet Levi, but they don't, unlike, for example, Truma and Chala, they don't actually have any intrinsic Kedusha. The Kohen himself is allowed to give them to whoever he wants to eat, for example. Lamaisa, nowadays, you don't often see people being careful about Zroi L'Chayayim V'Keva, and there are a number of reasons for that. There's a question whether maybe does it apply in Eretz Yisrael, or does it apply in Chutz La'aretz, or only in Eretz Yisrael. There is also a point. Avraham Moshe, you mentioned in connection with yesterday's Gemara, the question that all Kohenim nowadays are not Vade Kohenim, so that comes up in this connection, for example. Given that no Kohen nowadays knows 100% for sure that he's a Kohen, then we can argue that if you want the Matanis, you have to demonstrate HaMotzi Mechavel Avaraya. You can't bring a solid proof that you're a Kohen, therefore I don't have to give you the Matanis. So if it had been that you couldn't eat from the animal until you gave the matanos, then you would have to, the same way as we take truma and challah nowadays. But since anyway, it's not, as the Gemara is saying over here, then therefore if the Kohen himself wants it, I'm motzi mechavel avaraya, and that's the reason why many people are not careful with it nowadays. Okay, but in any case, the point is, Reb Preda is saying he was careful with that. Now, going back to, we said the second thing he did was v'loy beirachti lifnei kohen. He said, I never made the bracha, which Rashi says we're talking about the bracha of benching in the presence of a kohen. The question is, well, memra d'mal yosehi, are you telling me it's an advantage to do that, that you're supposed to do that? V'ha'amar Rabbi Yechanan, didn't Rabbi Yechanan say just the opposite? Kol tamar chacham shemavarech lefonav afilu kohen gadol ama'aretz. If a Talmud Chacham allows that a Kohen, even if it's a Kohen Gadol, says the bracha in front of him, when that Kohen Gadol is an Amo Oretz, Ose Talmud Chacham Chayev Misa, then that Talmud Chacham is actually, on the contrary, it's not a good thing. You don't say it's a good thing he honored the Kohen. On the contrary, it's a bad thing and he's Chayev Misa. Shenema Kol Masanai Ohavu Maves, as the Pasuk says, the Torah personified says, all those who hate me love death, and Altikum Masanai Ava Masniai. Don't read Masanai, all those who hate me, but Masniai, those who make other people hate me. In other words, what's going to happen? People see that the Talmud Chacham is secondary in importance to the Amor. So he's going to say there's no benefit from learning Torah. So you're not supposed to do that. So what does Reb Preda mean that he made sure to do that? The answer is Kikama Iyu B'Shavim. The answer is Reb Preda is talking about when the Kohen is on an equal level than him. So therefore, the Kohen is not an Amoritz, in other words, so then he would make sure to honor the Kohen first. So Tosfos says, in that case, what's the Chiddush? Of course, then you have a mitzvah of V'kidashtoi, to give the Kohen preference in, among other things, making the bracha ahead. And the answer is, Tosfos says, when we say Shabin, we don't necessarily mean that the other Kohen Gadol was a Talmud Chacham of the caliber of a Preda. Just that he was a Talmud Chacham, that he was a Talmud Chacham. Tosfos also discusses over here, is it possible that maybe the word beirachti, lifnei kohen over here is actually talking about not benching, but rather getting an aliyah. That what would happen is that technically Tosfos learns, now we learned a few days ago, for example, that Rav Huna used to get the aliyah of kohen, even though he wasn't a kohen, and similarly we talked about the possibility that maybe Rav did the same thing. But Tosfos says that might apply only on Shabbos and Yom Tov and other times like that when there's a large gathering in shul, or the other way around. Actually, that on days when there's a large gathering in shul, then you should have the kohen read first, as long as he's not a complete Amo Aretz. But on Mondays and Thursdays, the Talmud Chacham could get the aliyah of kohen, even though there are kohenim over there, even if he's not as great as the other kohenim. Now the Preda was Machmer on himself, and he didn't want to do that even on Monday and Thursday. But again, we're saying the Shavin, we're not talking about where the Kohen who was there was an Amoritz. Rather, we're talking about where the Kohen was a Talmud Chacham, but not a Talmud Chacham of the caliber of a Preda. Other Rishonim talk about other possibilities. The Rashba talks about that maybe it's only a problem when you're actually telling him, you go ahead and bench because you're a Kohen. So now, if the Kohen is an Amoritz, then that's a problem. But if the Talmud Chacham just says, you go ahead and bench, without mentioning the fact that he's a Kohen, then maybe it would be allowed, even if the Kohen is an Amo Oretz, because then you're not making it obvious that you're honoring him because of the Kohen. Then you're just honoring him, okay, because at random you decided to honor him with Birkas HaMazon. And the Ritva talks about that maybe you don't necessarily need that. You could say that we are talking about where you are saying it's because he's a Kohen, then maybe sometimes it would be allowed. But anyway, whatever the case, the point is that a Preda was careful always about that. If at all possible, he wouldn't be going ahead of the Kohen. Okay. Next, Shalu Talmidei Rav Nechunya ben Akana. The fourth one on the list is they asked Rav Nechunya ben Akana's Talmidim asked him, "Bameher rachti yamim? In what schosim did you live long?" Amalahem, he tells them, "Miyomai leniskabadti b'kloim chaverai. I never got honor through the embarrassment of somebody else." Now, the Gemara is going to give an example in a second of, for example, somebody else doing a degrading job instead of you. The Meiri adds also that it would mean, for example, it can also mean verbally. For example, imagine you have a person who says, well, I don't do this such and such an Aveira like that guy does. So that would be an example of you getting yourself honor through embarrassing the other guy. So the Mechoni Ben Akana was always very careful not to do that, even, of course, in a way where it would be perfectly mutter. Because that's the point with all these things. We're talking about these are all midas siddhas. We're not talking about things that are me'ikir adin. Also, there never went into my bed the klala or the making fun of somebody else, meaning as the Gemara is going to say, that if somebody else made fun of him during the day, then he would always be careful to be moichel them before he went to sleep. So what does it mean? So that and the third one, he says, I was always willing to be mevater when it came to my money. I wasn't picky about collecting everything that I'm obligated in. So let's explain each of these things. Leinis kabati b'klaim chaveri means ki hod Rav Huna dori mora akas. We have the example that Rav Huna one time was carrying a shovel on his shoulder. So we learned yesterday that there was a period in his life when Rav Huna was very poor. So the pashtus, this was during that time when he, so he's carrying a shovel to go to work. Also Rav Chana b'chaniloi b'kadori minei. Rav Chana b'chaniloi came and was trying to take the shovel from him. It's not derech eretzik that Rav Huna, the great Talmid Chacham, should have to be carrying it. Omale, so Rav Huna tells him, "E regilus the doris b'masach. If you regularly carry such things in your own city, dori, then go ahead and carry it over here. It won't be a bezoyim for you. The eloi, but if not, isyakuri anobiz regilus the didach lenichali. I don't want to be honored through your degradation." So in other words, so that's an example of when iskabati b'koin chaverai. So Rav Nachunya is saying that he was always very careful about that kind of thing.
But he's speaking about him, about the.
So we're giving an example from Rav Huna, who lived a couple hundred years later. But we're illustrating, in other words, that that's an example of being the scabbard b'klein chaver. So in other words, not only like the Meiri says, where you're outright saying something that puts somebody else in a bad light, well, I don't do such and such like that guy does, but even we're talking about something like this, like having somebody else do a degrading job instead of him, we're maybe not even degrading. I mean, we're talking about carrying a shovel. He wouldn't do that if in any way it would affect the other guy's comfort. So that's the first one. When he says, right? He says that if another yid ever made fun of me, kilas doesn't necessarily mean cursing. It could also mean to be making fun of. So if somebody else made fun of me, I would never let that come into my bed. So the Gemara says, ki hod mar zutra, as we see the example, again, a couple hundred years later, of what mar zutra did, ki have a solik lepuye, when he was going to bed, Omar, before he went to bed, he would say, shori le lechom adetzaron. I forgive everybody who was mitzayim me, anybody who caused me trouble or pain during the day. This is, we have the paragraph before Kriyas Shema Shehamitzvah. Rabbeinu Shel Olam is based on that concept. By the way, you also have the Zohar tells a story of a poshta yid in the times of Rabbi Abba, who one time the Zohar tells the story. The guy was sleeping on a walk outside the city of Lud, and a snake came and was about to bite him. But then all of a sudden, a branch fell off a tree and killed the snake, and then the guy got up and left, and right after that, the walk that he was on fell down and shattered. So Rav Abba realized, look at that, the guy was saved twice without even realizing it from terrible things that would have happened to him. So he asks the guy, what special schus do you have? And the guy says, like Rav Nachunya over here, that he never goes to sleep angry at another yid, he always forgives him ahead of time. So that's also a basis for that paragraph, that Rabbeinu Shel Olam is all based on that idea.
Because of this thing.
No, just an unrelated thing. But the point is, it was like very precariously located or whatever, and it fell down and right. And the third thing, the third thing, I was always mevater with my money. What does that mean? As we have the example, as we have the example, the Gemara tells us in Baba Basra that Eiv was mevater with his money. He would leave the full pruta for the storekeeper from his money. Meaning, Rashi over there in Baba Basra explains, sometimes you have, like, let's say, for example, you hired somebody for a job or something, and it so happens it was such a small job that you only owe him half a pruta. So what are you going to do? There's no such coin as a half a pruta. You're going to tell him, let's go together to the store, and we'll buy something in partnership. We'll buy, let's say, a bag of fruit, let's say, in partnership, and I'll take half, and you'll take half, and that way you'll be paid your half pruta. So Eiv wouldn't do that. He would give the guy the full pruta. So similarly over here, Rav Nachunya is saying that he would do the same kind of thing. Sure. Now. So far we went through four chachamim, where it just says in general that their talmidim ask them, "What do you do in order to be zeicha to long life?" Now we're going to have a couple of other examples where a specific person asks them. So the first one is Shal Rabbi Akiva Esrim Nechonia Gadol. Rabbi Akiva asked him, Nechonia Gadol, Amalei B'meher Rati Yamim. With what zchus did you live so long? So also Gabzi, the servants of Rabbi Nechonia Hagadol came, and they were hitting Rabbi Akiva because they thought, what kind of a question is that to ask? What is that? Like, you don't want him to live long? Like you're jealous of the fact that he's living long? Now, with the other four, we don't find they did that. The pashtus, because their talmidim in general are asking. You're not going to assume that all their talmidim have it in for their rebbe. But here, where it's one individual person, now apparently, as we're going to see, the point was that the servants of Rabbi Nechonia did not know who Rabbi Akiva was. They didn't realize what a great talmid chacham he is, and then he has a legitimate reason to ask the question. Well, he wasn't necessarily a talmid of Rabbi Nechonia. So he Rabbi Nechonia was a contemporary of his. So this could have been for, we know this was during the 24 years when Rabbi Akiva is learning in the Beis Medrash. We don't know, whatever it was. So they're hitting him, not knowing who he is. Solik Yosef Areshi Dedikla. So Rabbi Akiva climbed up to get out of their way and climbed up to the top of a palm tree. Omale. And from there he calls down to Rabbi Nechonia, Rebbe, Im Nemer Keves Loma Nemer Echon. In the parasha of the Talmud that we say every morning in davening, we say it's a keves echod tasav abayter, base a keves a sheni tasav ben habayim. Keves automatically means one. So what does that say the word echod for? So amalahu. So now when Rabbi Nechonia heard the question, he realized. So he says to his servants, "Servim and Abonanhu, he's a young Talmud Chacham. Shavkuhu, leave him alone." The fact that he's asking the question, he's not asking it out of the original question about why I live long. He's not asking out of chutzpah. He wants to know because it's part of Torah.
Oh, so he didn't know
who he was. Rabbi Nechonia may not have realized either. But now that's yeah. Omalei, so first Rabbi Nechonia answered the question about the pasuk. He says, "Echad means miyuchad shebe'edrei." It means the special one from among the flock. In other words, you don't just pick any random sheep and use it for the korban tumah. You have to use the best quality one. And Omalei, and then he answers the question. So why did I live long? Miyamei lekibalti matonis. I never in my whole life received gifts. I never received gifts. I never was particular about my midos, meaning in other words, if somebody insulted me or did something bad to me, I never held it for a long time against them. I was moichel them as soon as possible. And I was generous with my money. So that was the third one that we said before, like Nechonia ben Akana. So Loki Balti Matonos, what does he mean when he says I never received presents? As we have the example, he held it up a lozer, as we have in a later generation, Rebbe Lozer acted that way. Kiyavim Shadrile Matonis Mimenesia. If they sent him presents from the household of the Nasi, Rebbe Lozer lived most of his life in Eretz Yisrael. So you had the Nasi over there, you had the Nasiim, the descendants of Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, ultimately the descendants of Hillel. So if they would send him a present, like have a shokel, he wouldn't accept the present. He have a mazamni lay, and if they invited him to a meal with them, lo have a ozil, he wouldn't go. He would decline the invitation. Amalahu, and he would tell them, lo nichalahu de'achya. Do you want me not to live? After all, the pasuk says somebody who hates gifts will live. So I want to be in that category. On the other hand, the Gemara says that a contemporary of Rabbi Lazar has acted differently. So he also, when they send him a present from the family of the Nasi, he wouldn't accept it either, because again, on the other hand, but when they invited him to a meal there, then he would go. Omar, because he would say, unlike Rabbi Lazar, who felt that that's a kind of matana as well, Rabbi Zera said that different. They are getting honor through me being there. So on the contrary, then it's not they're giving me something, I'm giving them something by participating in their suda, and therefore it's appropriate to do that. Yeah, same as Raturn or whatever, yeah. And when Rabbi Nechonia HaGadol says, I was never particular about my midas, what's so great about that? As in fact, Rava says, when a person is maver on his midas, we learned this in Rosh Hashanah and also in Yomah, if a person is maver al midosav, mavinun menu kol pshav, then Hashem takes away all his avedas. Shenemar, the pasuk says, noise oven va'over al pesha. As the pasuk says, Hashem forgives oven and he overlooks pesha. Oven means deliberate averus. Pesha means rebellious averus. So lamin, no, you say oven. It means to whom, what kind of person does Hashem forgive the averus? Lamisha, over our pesha, someone who's willing to overlook the pesha, the rebellious things that other people did against him. In fact, in Rosh Hashanah, we learned an example where Rav Huna Breid and Yeshua one time was very sick, and they felt so sick that they thought he's going to pass away, and then he recovered. And it turned out because he had that midah of being Mavra Midah. So now Rav Nechon Yagod will say in the same way, and therefore that gave him the schus of living long. An interesting point is, why of all things, okay, Rabbi Akiva has to get away from the servants who are hitting him, but why, first of all, did he climb to the top of a palm tree? Why did the Gemara make a point of mentioning it was a palm tree? And number two, why does he ask this particular thing? There's a couple of interesting explanations in it. One is from the Megala Amukas. He says, the fact that a person lives long comes from the level comes from the midah of Hashem of Erech HaPayim. Because, in other words, usually a person would be Yemei Shnei Seinu Vahem Shivim Shana, because usually a person lives 70 years corresponding to the seven midos of Hashem. Being Bigburis Shmonim Shana, he says, if a person lives to 80, it means it's Mitzad Bina. So if a person lives beyond that, then it means that there's Erech HaPayim is involved, the midah of Erech HaPayim is involved. The fact that he has hashpa from Hashem's midah of Erech HaPayim, Arich Anpin, as we call it in Chassidus terminology. So now Rabbi Akiva is asking that, but again, they thought that he's asking just why'd you live so long, like as if I don't want you to live anymore. So now he climbed up to a palm tree, where a palm tree represents a tzaddik katamu yifra, and he asks about this thing, keves as a keves echad, where the answer that Rabbi Nechunya gives him is miyuchad shebedroi. Also, the echad refers to that midah of Erech HaPayim, that midah of Arich Anpin, that which is from the level of keser. Arich Anpin, we talk about chassidus. That you have Arich Anpin and Zer Anpin, which are Arich Anpin is keser, Zer Anpin is zah, is the six midas. So therefore, in other words, so that's it's one thing that's higher than all the other midas. So therefore, in other words, so he realizes with Rabbi Akiva's question that Rabbi Akiva is not asking stam, why'd you live long? He's asking, how does it happen that you had ashpa from Arich Anpin? And therefore, he answers him with the midas that he had. Yeah. Okay.
Why have to say that?
So therefore, so that's why I asked him about something involving Echad. So why the palm tree? Because Tzadik Hachama Yifra. Yeah. Okay. Next, another one. Shal Rebbe Yisrael Yishur Ben Korcha, Bameh Erach Yomim. Rebbe asked Rebbe Yishur Ben Korcha, with what zchus did you live so long? Amalei, sort of Yeshua tells him, Katz de Machaye, what are you tired of me living? What kind of a question is that? Omaloi Rebbe, so Rebbe says, Torah hi v'limud ani tzorich. This is part of Torah. I need to learn it. I'm not stam asking out of curiosity. Omaloi, so Rebbe Yeshua ben Korcha answers him, Miyamai le nistakalti b'dmus odom rasha. In my whole life, I never looked at or stared at, maybe it means like you might notice it as a casual glance, but I never really looked at the face of a rasha. D'amar Rabbi Yechanan, as in fact we find that Rabbi Yechanan says, Oso lo odom nistaka b'tzalam b'dmus odom rasha. You're not allowed to look or to stare. So Gilui Nashas says, it doesn't mean just like to, that brings, the Gilui Nashas, Rabbi Akiva Eger brings from the Magen Avraham, doesn't just mean like you see him like out of the corner of your eye or something. We're talking about like you gaze at him, like you make sure to notice what his face looks like. So I would never do that with an Adam Rosh. Shenema, as we find in the Pasuk, where Elisha, so you have a story over there in Malachim, where the king of Yehuda and the king of Yisrael and the king of Edom are all going to fight against Moab. They have a problem. They're running out of water. So they go to Elisha. To ask him what to do. And he says, when he sees Yehoram, he says, you're such a Rosha. Yehoram worshipped Abba Dezada and did other Averis. So he says, Lulei Pnei Yehoshaphat Melech Yehuda Ani Nose. Were it not for the fact that I'm favoring Yehoshaphat Melech Yehuda, because he's a tzaddik, im abit elecha v'im ereka, otherwise I wouldn't even look at you and I wouldn't even see you, because you're an Adam Rosha. So you see, in other words, that you're not supposed to look at an Adam Rosha.
It means how you got together, the time they got together.
So the pasuk describes how Yehoram decided to go to war because Moab had rebelled against him, and he asks Yehoshaphat, will you help me? And Yehoshaphat is willing to. Mind you, Yehoshaphat, so there had been one or two times before that where Yehoshaphat had joined together with the kings of Israel on projects, and Nevi'im criticized him for that, because what are you doing joining with a Russia? But maybe he figured maybe Yehoram is not as much of a Rasha, or maybe he figured this is an important point, because this is an important thing, because Moab has rebelled and we need to subjugate them, whatever the case. Yeah. Okay. And The Gemara continues, Rabbi Lazar Omer Einav Kehes. Rabbi Lazar says, not only are you not allowed to look at an Adam Nasha, but a person who does, his eyes become dim. Shenema, by Hiki Zakin Yitzchok, but Techena Einav Mera Oiz. As it says, when Yitzchok became old, his eyes became dim. Why? Mishum de Istako be Esav Anasha. Because he looked at Esav, and that made his eyes go dim.
He looked at his
Madrigal. Okay, he looked at his Madrigal, but still, he was a Rasha. So Gemara says, Vahog Gamalay. Still, you're telling me that's what caused Yitzchok to go blind? Well, I'm going to be Yitzchok. Don't we have a different reason why he went blind? La'olam alti kilas hediyat kalabeinecha. The curse of even a simple person should never be a small light thing in your eyes. You should never say, "Well, he's a hediyat. His klala doesn't mean anything anyway." Shari Avimelech kilas sara, because we find that Avimelech, the king of the Plishtim, cursed Sara v'niskayim bezara, and his curse came true in her descendants. Shenemar, as we find, after Avimelech kidnapped Sarah, and then he was forced to return her, and he and his family had terrible plagues, etc. So he says, "Hinehu loch ksus einayim. Behold, this is for you a covering of eyes. Al tiki ksus elaksias einayim. Don't read ksus, but rather ksias, a covering over of eyes." In other words, he's telling her that because of what you did to me, because you passed yourself off as Avraham's sister, and you caused this whole thing to happen, therefore there should be blindness in your family. And it was Niskayim and Yitzchak. So you see that even a killer's head, it was a powerful thing. And the answer is Havahog Gamalay. The answer is, well, he meant it, yeah. No, you know, she presented herself as Avraham's sister. It was possible success of it, because Avraham told her. Yeah, so that's apparently, I mean, there's many different meanings of Hinu Loksos Inayim, but that's the Gemara sees that as one of the meanings of what he's saying, yeah. And the answer is Havahog Gamalay. The answer is both things combined are what called Yitzchak's blindness. The truth is, I mean, Rashi mentions on the Pasuk three things why he went blind, and then the Medrash mentions like another nine altogether. So altogether, there are like a dozen reasons why he went blind, but you have in particular one of them was the fact that he looked at the face of the Rasha. In other words, if it hadn't been for that, maybe Avimelech's klala wouldn't have had any room to be chal, only because he looked at the face of the Rasha, so that made room for the klala to take effect. Rava Amar Mehocha. Rava says, I have a different pasuk that expresses this idea that you shouldn't look at the face of a Rasha. A pasuk says, Se'es Pnei Rasha Loi Toi. To look at the face of a Rasha is not good. Okay. Next, B'shas Pti Rasa. When Rebbe was getting ready to take leave of Rabbi Shoban Karka, after they had this conversation, Amalei, he says, Rebbe, Borcheni. He says, Rebbe, give me a bracha. Amalei, so Rabbi Shoban Karka tells him, Yehi Rotzen Shtagia Lachatzi Yomai. It should be Hashem's will that you should reach half of my age. There's a Tosfos in Bava Kamma that discusses, where Hagiyon HaShas, Rabbi Akiva Eger references it over here in his notes, that discusses the question, is Yesh Omrim that this Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha is the son of Rabbi Akiva? In which case, Tosfos calculates that it seems a little hard to say that, Tosfos says, because then it comes out he wasn't necessarily that old, relatively speaking, when he benched Rebbe. In order for him to bench Rebbe that he should live to at least half his life, it would have to be that he's benching Rebbe to live to at least 70. That would mean that he himself would live to 140. But if the Tosfos makes some calculations over there and says that Lechora, if he was born only after Rabbi Akiva started to learn Torah, which was when he was 40 years old, and you have Mishmesh Rabbi Akiva, know the Rebbe, then it comes out you don't really have enough years between Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, between him being born and Rebbe being born, for this bracha to really be effective. So Tosfos says, then maybe not. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha is the son of a man named Korcha. Okay, you know, there's a person of such a name. On the other hand, there is an interesting explanation that some people say that maybe what it was is Rabbi Akiva, we find evidence that Rabbi Akiva was actually married before he married Rachel, the daughter of Kalva Savua. Because in fact, Ovester of Nosson tells that when he went to Cheder to start learning Torah, he went together with his son. So what does that mean? The pastors, we don't mean that he and Rachel had lived together for several years and had a son who was old enough for Cheder, and then first he's starting to fulfill his promise and go learn Torah. The pastors, it means that he was previously married, his first wife died or they divorced, and he had a son from her, and that son now is 5 or 6 years old when he marries Rachel, and then he starts going and learning Torah. So Oibazoi, that son conceivably could be or Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. Anyway. So according to that, Tosfos, so that's the thing. Tosfos starts by saying, since we find that Rabbi Akiva was bald, there's a Gemara in Brachas where Ben Azai says on him, Chutz min akerei achazeh, so that might be a reason why to say Rabbi Yisroel ben Korcha is the son of Rabbi Akiva. So again, Tosfos doesn't like that explanation, but there is this possible explanation that he was in fact the son of Rabbi Akiva, but not a son of Rabbi Akiva and Rachel, and not a son from after Rabbi Akiva started learning Torah, but rather a son from back when Rabbi Akiva was an Amoritz, from the earlier period of his life. Anyway, so he said, you should live to half my lifespan. So Rebbe says, why shouldn't you give me a bracha that I live to your full lifespan? So Rebbe Shoven Kocha tells him, so what do you want? Your descendants after you should end up pasturing animals? In other words, what's going to happen? They're supposed to take over. One of your children is going to take over as Nasi after you. If you continue living for a long time, then what are they going to do with their lives? They're never going to become the Nasi. So now, of course, you could say, and Marsha asked the question, why didn't he just mention that all of his descendants should have long lives? But whatever the case, he didn't. So in other words, you don't want to the older generation has to pass away and leave room for the younger generation.
Yeah, but there's a lot of this which is either Nasi.
Yeah, but the point is he wanted that ultimately the next generation needs their Nasi. Yeah. Okay. More on this topic of not looking at Rishayim. The Gemara says, Avuha bar Ihi umin Yamin bar Ihi. These were two Amirayim, two brothers. Chad Amo. One of them said, Taisili, there should come a reward to me, Minashamayim, Delay Stakli Bikursi. I never stared at a goy. The Chad Amo, and the other one says, Taisili, I should get a reward, Minashamayim, Delay Abdi Shutwas Bahadi Kursi. I never made a partnership together with a goy. Now, Tosfos points out that there are cases where it's osur mi'ikra din to make a partnership with a goy. Namely, where the situation is, where if there comes to be a shvua, then the goy is going to swear by his gods, by his getchkin. So you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to call that a goy is going to mention the name of his getchkin. However, we're talking about over here, where one of these brothers, when he's talking about himself, he says, even if it was the kind of partnership where we avoid that problem, we say, let's say, for example, that if there's going to be a shvua, then I forego, you don't have to swear. I'll pay you whatever you're claiming. Then there's no problem that he's going to swear in the name of a getchka. Nevertheless, this Avua Bar'iyu, Min Yamin Bar'i, was careful not even in that case to make a partnership with a goy. Nowadays, by the way, it says in Shulchan Aruch, there's less of an issue with it because the goyim don't swear in the name of their getchkas. If they have, first of all, nowadays in court, they don't swear in the name of any getchka anyway. They just say, I solemnly swear or whatever. But even in the old days, they didn't swear in the name of an actual getchka. They would swear in the name of their saints. They'd swear, they'd say, I swear in the name of saint whatever. Fine, but they're saints, so they're not actual Avodah Zarah. So therefore, Tosfos elsewhere discusses that that's not necessarily a problem nowadays. But he was particularly machmir on that. By the way, what is he saying? What are they saying? Tasi Li, I should get a reward. Since when do you do mitzvahs for reward? So Marsha in Shabbos, where you have a number of Tasi Li's like that, says they're talking about they want the reward of mitzvah gereres mitzvah. I was careful with this mitzvah, so therefore Hashem should give me a reward by giving me the opportunity to do more mitzvahs in the future. There's a different explanation. The Ritva says that maybe we're talking about mitzvahs that most people are careless with. So he's saying, in other words, that these are mitzvahs that most people are careless with, so therefore they're entitled to ask for schar for those. And you have other examples in the Gemara and Shabbos of various mitzvahs in connection with Shabbos and in connection with other things that people were particularly careful with. The last one, Shalu Talmidim Rav Zeira B'meher Rachti Yomim. Rav Zeira's Talmidim asked him, in what schus did you live long? Omalami tells him, I never got angry in my house, meaning even though you have sometimes a person has to get angry at the members of his household to get them to do something. Nevertheless, he was always careful to not do that actually with a thought of kas, but actually only at most only to look like he's angry, but not to actually feel angry. I never walked in front of somebody who was greater than me, which means, now you're not supposed to, when you walk together, when Talmud walks together with the Rebbe, you're supposed to walk a little bit behind him, like to the side, but a little bit behind. But sometimes it happens, in other words, that you accidentally walk a step or two ahead. He was always careful not to do even that. I never thought words of Torah in dirty alleys where there's tzoya or meiraglayim or whatever, where, now you're not allowed to say shema in such places. There's a machlokas in the Gemara and Brachas, whether you're allowed to think Torah in such places. The halacha is, in fact, you're not allowed to. Reb Zera held by the opinion that technically you're allowed to, nevertheless he was machmer on himself not to.
In those days
it must have been harder, yeah. I never walked four amos without learning Torah or, and wearing tefillin. I never slept in the Beis Medrash, not a full sleep and not even a nap, even though technically, as we're going to learn on Amud Beis, the Talmid Chachamim are allowed to nap in the Beis Medrash. He was machmer on himself not even to do that. I was never happy when somebody else stumbled. Now, that can mean any of a lot of things. It can mean, for example, when you're learning Torah. You're arguing a point with somebody else. You find a solid raya for your proof for your position that slugs up the other guy. So it's natural to feel happy that you proved your point. Nevertheless, he wouldn't, because it means that the other guy lost out and the other guy was wrong. Another example of it, Maharsho gives an example. Let's say, for example, he bought something that ended up being cheaper than expected. So he could be happy, I got a bargain. But on the other hand, the other guy lost out. So therefore he's not happy with that. And so forth. Or they're in parentheses, they're really supposed to be the other way around. I never called another person by his chanicha or by his chachina. So Rashi says chanichosei means a name that people gave a derogatory name that people gave to somebody. So not only to not make a derogatory name for himself, that of course you're not allowed to. But even if there's a name for him, a derogatory name that other people made up for him, I would never use that. I would never call him by that. According to the sect, Chachinosei would be, even if it's a name that's hereditary in his family, a derogatory name. I would be careful not to call him by that. So in the Gemara, it has it here backwards, Bachanichosei and Bachachinosei. It's supposed to be the other way around. Bachachinosei or Bachanichosei. Chanichosei means a family name. Chachinosei would mean a name that was given to him personally. Yeah. The Aruch has different explanations, and it means a name that I made up for him versus a name that he already has from before. Similar to Rashi, but different. But there's other points also. Ben Yoyada, for example, says it may include also Taka, we were talking about yesterday, let's say calling a person by a nickname, like calling him Yossel or whatever. So he wouldn't even do that. He'd call the person by his actual name in Lashon Kodesh, because the name is a source of chayus for the person, so he wanted to make sure to bring down that chayus milamayla to him. And for the same reason, the Ben Yoyada says also, by the same token, he wouldn't call a person by his last name, let's say. Like sometimes you have, Maisim B'chol Yoyim, that you say that you call somebody by his last name. But Reb Zeira was careful not to do that. The Mishnah says, "Va'oid Omer Rabbi Yehuda." Furthermore, Rabbi Yehuda said certain dinim about the kedusha of a shul. Now, Tosfos says before in the previous Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda was makel. He said that when you're selling a shul, you can sell it as a chotzer, and the lekeach can do with it whatever he wants. Unlike the chachamim in the Mishnah, who said that you have to make sure that he doesn't use it for any of four degrading purposes. So there, Rabbi Yehuda is makel. Here in our Mishnah, he seems to be machmir. So what's the va'oid? So Tosfos says, okay, what it means is, in other words, in the previous Mishnah, he was saying that davka, if you sell it for a chotzer, then he's allowed to do it for whatever he wants. But if you don't, then he's not allowed to. So that's a chumrah. So now he comes and says another chumrah as far as the dinim of a shul. The Rashba says that's a little bit of a doichet. He says, no, what it is Rabbi Yehuda is saying over there, that when you're selling the shul, you can't sell it where the guy explicitly says, I plan to turn it into a merchatz or burski or what have you. So that is a chumrah, fine. If he does on his own later on, after he buys it, l'shem chotzer, he decides to do that, then you're allowed, but not if he says at the time of the sale that he plans to. So now Rabbi Yehuda is saying another chumrah. Also, the Rashba says it doesn't always have to be. Va'oid can just mean, Tosfos themselves actually points out in a different place that va'oid doesn't necessarily have to mean another chumrah. Rabbi Yehuda said a din about shuls in the previous Mishnah. Now he says another din about shuls. So va'oid amar Rabbi Yehuda, beis hakneses shecharav, if a shul was destroyed, or just fell apart, or just collapsed or whatever, ein maspid in v'seichoy, you're not allowed to make a hesped in it, because it's not the cover dick for the ruins of the shul. In other words, the point is a hesped, they would usually need a large area. So a ruined shul is a large area. It's a place where you could gather a bunch of people for a hesped, but you're not allowed to do that because it's not covered for the shul, even though it's in ruins. The in mafshilin the secha chavolim. We're not talking about making a hesped for the shul itself. And we're going to talk about on Omid Beis that there's a certain kind of hesped that you are allowed to make in a shul. We're talking about stama hesped for a yid passed away, and you're going to make a hesped for him over there. You're not allowed to braid ropes in it, which Rashi explains. It includes other kinds of malachas as well. The reason it mentions braiding ropes is partially you need a large area for that. So like each, you have two people pulling on each end of the rope and twisting it. So therefore, so you would think that a destroyed shul is a natural place for it. It's a big, long, it's a big, large area. So you're saying you're not allowed to do like that, and you're not allowed to do other malachas in there either. The ain't person the seichem mitzodet. You're not allowed to set traps for animals over there. The ain't shochen argagay peiris. You're not allowed to spread out fruit on the roof of it to dry. The ain't oisin kapandaria, and you can't use it as a shortcut. Shenema. Now, why is this? The shul is destroyed. What's the problem? Shenema, because the pasuk says vashmosi es b'sheichem. The pasuk says I will destroy. I will make desolate your mikdashim, which means kedushas and afkain shomim means they still have kedusha even though they're desolate and destroyed. So therefore, we say you still have to treat them respectfully. And the Mishnah continues, Olu b'yasavim, if grass and weeds starts growing in the ruins of the shul, lo yitloish, you shouldn't pick the grass, mipnei agmas nefesh, because you want people to have agmas nefesh, people should see the place overgrown with weeds and remember how it was when it was built and when they used to gather over there, and that will motivate them to daven and to make efforts to rebuild the shul. So we'll learn on Daf Chav Tes. We'll talk about a little detail about that din with the grass. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Tana Rabbanan, Botek Nesias Ein Noigin Ben Kalus Rosh. You're not allowed to have Kalus Rosh. You're not allowed to act casually and disrespectfully in a shul. So that includes Ein Oichlin Behen Ve'en Shosin Behen. You're not allowed to eat and drink in a shul. Now, what do we mean? We have all the time we eat and drink in shuls. So first of all, Tosfos says if there are rooms around the shul, then for sure you're allowed to. So this is why, for example, in many shuls, they have a separate room for the kiddush. But what about, for example, shuls where they don't, where they have the kiddush in shul itself? So we'll talk about a little more on Omid Beis about hetayim for it. The ein ne'osin behen, you're also not allowed to beautify yourself in it, like to use a shul as a place, let's say, to comb your hair or whatever. The Meiri says it means more generally to treat the shul like your house, like to relax over there or whatever. Ve'en metaylin v'hen, you're not allowed to take a stroll in there, like just strolling around in the shul. Ve'en nechnosin v'hen v'chamim v'nei achamim over g'shamim v'nei achamim. You're not allowed to go into the shul during the summertime because it's hot, or during the wintertime because it's raining, to get out of the heat or the cold. You're not allowed to. You're not allowed to make inside a shul a hesped of an individual person. Meaning, in other words, as opposed to, we're going to say, a hesped of rabbi. But you learn Tanakh in shul, v'shonin behen, and you're allowed to learn Mishnayos in there. Or maspidin behen hesped shol rabim, and you're allowed to make a hesped of rabim, which means when a Talmid Chacham passes away, and there needs to be a large gathering of people who gather to make a hesped for them. So again, a shul being a large building, you have to remember a shul was very often in those days the largest building in town, because everybody else's houses were fairly small. Unless you were rich, you had a mansion. But if you were a poor person, if you were a poor middle class person, you had a smallish house. So a shul might very well be the largest building in the community. So therefore, when you have a hesped shol rabim, meaning a hesped of a Talmid Chacham, then you're allowed to make such a hesped in the shul.
This is the rooms of the shul, right?
No, we're talking about here. We're talking about in a shul that's built. Oh. Here we're talking about so far in a shul that's built. Amr Rabbi Yehuda Amasai, but Rabbi Yehuda says, when is all that talking about? Be yeshuvan, only when the shul is settled, only when the shul is still functional. Abba b'chubanan, but if the shul is destroyed, manichin oisan, then we have to leave the ruins alone. Va'olim behen asavim, and grass and weeds will grow over there. V'lo yitlish mitnei agmas nefesh, and you shouldn't pick the grass because of agmas nefesh, like we said in the Mishnah. Who said anything about grass? Rabbi Yehuda sounds like he's saying you should leave the grass there. Sounds like he's implicitly arguing with somebody. But Tanakama didn't say anything about grass that Rabbi Yehuda should have to be responding to. So the answer is Chasuri Master. The Braisa is missing a phrase. The Hoki Kutoni, what it means is, the Braisa continues. The Tanakama is saying, Omachabdin Oisan, and even when the shul is destroyed, you still continue to sweep the area. And you sprinkle water to lay down the dust. In order that grass doesn't grow there. And now on that, Rabbi Yehuda says, when does that apply? that the last part about sweeping and sprinkling water, the yeshuvan, only when the shul is still operational. But when the shul is destroyed, then you allow the grass to grow there. And that's what he continues. Continues the Gemara. Omer of Asi, Batik Nisiyas Shubba Bavel al Tnai Hei Nasuyim. The shuls in Bavel are built with a Tnai, meaning a Tnai that you should be able to use them for other purposes. Now, here you have a Machlokas Rishonim. What are we talking about? Tosfos says we're talking about specifically when they're destroyed. In other words, we just said that a shul, once destroyed, you're still not allowed to use it for various purposes that I mentioned in the Mishnah. You have to leave it and let grass grow there, and hopefully eventually the people will be motivated to daven and to help rebuild it. But we're talking about over here, when the shul is no longer used as a shul, then we're saying in Bavel, then there's a tnai that they're allowed to use them. Now, why specifically in Bavel as opposed to Eretz Yisrael? Tosfos says because the ones in Bavel are not always going to be functional. Eventually, Mashiach is going to come and everybody's going to be in Eretz Yisrael. On the other hand, the ones in Eretz Yisrael, you can't say that. Even the destroyed ones still have kedusha. Tosfos also points out in this connection, we learned a few days ago that we had a case where Ravina had a ruins of a shul where he wanted to plant in it and he had to buy it from Shiva Turveyair, the Maimedan Shehir. So why? Ravina lived in Bavel, the shul that he owned, the ruins of the shul that he owned were in Bavel. The Tosfos says because planting over there was also like Kalos Rosh. So therefore, so that would be something, even in Bavel, it would be also, even after the shul was destroyed, unless you buy it from Shiva Turveyair, etc. On the other hand, the Ramban learns that what we're talking about over here about the Tanai is talking about while the shul is operational. That there's a Tanai regarding Bavel that you're allowed to use the shul there for various purposes. So therefore, you would be allowed to eat and drink and so forth in there. So that helps us for the shuls outside Eretz Yisrael. This partly explains how we're able to make sudas and then fabrengens and whatnot in a shul. So far as Eretz Yisrael, so here we're talking about a shul. Here we're talking about a shul. So a Beis Medrash has different dinim. We're going to talk about that soon. But here we're talking about Beis Knesses. But the fact is, we often see that Fabrengen and Simchas and whatever are held in shuls. So another...
But Beis Knesses means only for them. We do them for learning and
them. Right, but nevertheless, that doesn't take away the kedusha of a shul. But so that's one point. But another point is also, so actually you do have a valid point. We're going to say soon the Beis Medrash, Tamar Chachamim are allowed to eat and drink in it. So therefore, so there is that. But there's also the consideration that primarily what we're saying is you're allowed to do Sudas Mitzvah in it. So you're right, Stama party, you wouldn't be able to have in Shul. But if there's something that has something that's a Sudas Mitzvah, then you have more of a heter. Nevertheless, even though there's a tnai on the shuls and bubble, you're still not allowed to treat them with kalos rosh. So again, so Tosfos says that means that the afikain ein nogin ben kalos rosh means while the shul is operational. Tosfos says when it's destroyed, you would be allowed to, with the exception we said, for example, maybe a planting, because that's very much kalos rosh. But stam things of kalos rosh, you would be allowed to after they're destroyed. According to the Ramban, for sure it means while the shul is operational, you're not allowed to have kalos rosh. Umayinu cheshbonis, namely, you're not allowed to use the shul as a place where you're going to make calculations, like financial calculations. But that's kalos rosh. On the other hand, the poskim say you would be allowed to do over there cheshbonis of rab, cheshbonis of involving mitzvahs. Those you're allowed to do in a shul because that's not kalos rosh. In this connection, Ravashi says, a shul where they sit and make calculations, which we're saying the kind of calculations which is Osir and which is Kalos Rosh, Malinin Bayis a mess. They leave over a dead body. So it makes it sound, Malinin makes it sound like it's a chiyuv to leave a dead body over there. It must be Malinin Sakhat. What do you mean? Because you use it for Shbonis, therefore it's a chiyuv to be Malinin Bayis a mess. What is it impossible otherwise? Why does that create a chiyuv to do that? Ella, no, what it means is it means in the end they're going to be forced to have a mess mitzvah in it overnight. In other words, eventually in such a place, there's going to be people passing away in the city, and there's not going to be enough people to be able to bury them. So of necessity, they're going to have to leave some of the bodies in the shul overnight.
Because they use the shul
for cheshbonis. That's what we're saying. Okay, we said ve'en ne'osim v'hem. We said you're not allowed to beautify yourself in a shul, for example, like we said, to comb your hair or whatever. On the other hand, Chachamim and the Talmidim of the Chachamim are allowed to do that. What does it mean? We call a Beis Medrash a Beis Rabbanan. Literally means the house of the Rabbanan. Means it's like their house. They're allowed to treat it like their house, and so they're allowed to beautify themselves in it. And the point is, because they state Bati Medrashot in particular are called that, is because the Chachamim spend all their time over there, so therefore they're allowed to. We said the Einichnasim ben Bachamim Neachamim Vekshamim Neachamim. We said you're not allowed to go into a shul in the summertime because of the heat, and in the wintertime because of the cold. As we have the example, he held the Ravina of Rav Adar Bamasna, Habakaini. One time Ravina and Rav Adar Bamasna were standing, Vashali She'elta Mirava, they were asking Rava a question in Torah. Also Zilcha the Mitra, all of a sudden it started raining. Ivy the Beit Knishta, and they went into the shul. Amri, and they said, Hai Dailinim Beit Knishta, the reason we're going to that shul, Lav Mishum Mitra, not because we want to get out of the rain, because we wouldn't in fact be allowed to do that. Ella, Mishum the Shmaita, Boitzilusa Kiyama de Iskina, because to learn Torah requires a clarity of mind, like the kind of clarity that you have on a day when a north wind blows. The north wind helps clear up the sky. So, in other words, the point is they're saying, because the rain is distracting us from being able to learn Torah, and therefore we have to go inside. In other words, implying if it weren't for that, we wouldn't be able to go inside just because to get out of the rain. Now, didn't we just say that the Talmidei Chachamim are allowed to? So there's a couple of major answers. One answer is that there's a difference between a shul and a Beis Medrash. That again, there's a difference that a shul, which is used primarily or exclusively for davening, has different dinim, that has more, even though we learned yesterday that a Beis Medrash has greater kedusha than a shul. On the other hand, regarding these kinds of things, a Beis Medrash maybe has less kedusha, not really less kedusha, but the point is, because the Talmidei Chachamim spend most of their time there learning Torah, therefore, like we just said, it's considered to a certain extent like their house. On the other hand, a shul, which is used primarily or exclusively for davening, you don't have that dispensation. So that's one way of learning it. And here we're talking about they were going into a shul. The other way of learning it is even it would be allowed in a shul, but only because of doichet gadol. So therefore, so the eating and drinking, for example, over there is a matter of doichet gadol, because the Talmid Chacham, you can't just go home. You can't just go home to fix up his appearance or whatever and then come back. It would be too much of a schlep for him. But over here, for them to go in just because of the rain, that wouldn't have been necessarily derech gadol. So therefore, they're saying the reason why we're going in is because it's actually part of our learning Torah. We're doing it for the sake of being able to learn Torah more clearly, and not they're allowed to.
That's only they go in every day, but if they don't happen to be raining, they go in.
No, because in other words, the idea would be when it's a clear day and they're able to stand outside and talk with Rava, because then fine, there's no problem. The weather is nice, and therefore it's not bothering them from learning. But where the weather is not nice and it's bothering them from learning, then they were saying they're. Okay. So Rav Acha Bred Rav asked Rav Ashi, suppose a person has to go and call somebody in shul. So he has to go into the shul in order to call somebody, but he's not going in there in order to daven or in order to learn. Mai, what should he do? So Rav Ashi tells him, "Eat suva merabbanu." If the person who's coming in is a young Talmid Chacham, lema hilchasa. So let him say a halacha while he's there in the shul. And that way, he didn't go in just for the purpose of calling somebody else. He went in there for a valid purpose. V'eat tanahu. If he's not on the caliber, if he's not on the level of learning Gemara, of learning halachas, then fine. Let him at least learn a mishnah or lema masnisa. Let him learn a mishnah or a braisa. V'eat korahu. If he's not even on that level, he only knows Tanakh. Lema pesuka. Then let him say a pasuk. The Eloi, if he's not any of those things, then he can ask a kid in shul. They used to have the cheder would be in shul. So you ask a cheder kid over there, tell me a pasuk that you learned. And that way, at least you're learning Torah that way. Inami nishi puter v'nekum. Another possibility is stay there a while. Don't just go in and call the guy. Stay and sit there for a while. Then get up and go call the guy. The point is, sitting in shul itself is a mitzvah. As it says, Asher Yoshev Veseh. So therefore, just the sitting itself there is this is where we get, though, the concept that when you go into a shul, and you say a pasuk, for example, based on this gemara. We said, or maspidin ban hesped shel rabim. We said that you are allowed to make a hesped shel rabim in a shul. We said a hesped shel yachid, not, but a hesped shel rabim, yes. So hechi dami hespeded the rabim. What does that mean, a hesped of rabim? So machvi rab chistik is in hespeded the koi beir of shesh, the koi beir of shesh. So Rav Chista signaled when they asked him this question, for example, a hesped where Rav Sheshis is there. So Rashi explains, suppose, for example, that a member of Rav Sheshis' family passes away, and of course Rav Sheshis will be there for the hesped. That's the kind of hesped which is the hesped derabim. The Rashba says, what kind of a thing is that? Rav Chista is going to point like that, as if like he's giving an ayin hara to Rav Sheshes that somebody in his family should pass away. So he says, no. What Rav Chista meant was the kind of hesped where Rav Sheshes would consider the person who passed away important enough to attend his hesped. So not necessarily a member of Rav Sheshes' family, but in other words, if somebody, a yid, a Baal Madrega, passes away, and Rav Sheshes would attend the hesped, then that's the kind of hesped which is called hesped dirah. And Machvi Rav Sheshes going hesped to call you Rav Chista. And Rav Sheshes, when they asked him the question, he signaled in the opposite direction of a hesped where Rav Chista would be there. So they both held very highly of each other. They both held a hesped where the other, where Mechaber is, would be the kind of hesped that's considered a hesped dirah. So the Gemara gives another example. Rafram Aspid of a Kalste Vivek Nishta. Rafram made a hesped for his daughter-in-law in the shul. Now she's not a Talmud Chacham, so on what grounds is he doing that? Omar, he says, Imishum Yakara Didi, Imishum Yakara Dide or Dida Demisa. If some people are coming because of my covered, then that's reason enough to consider it a hesped dirachim. Other people are coming, or people are coming because of her covered. Also, Kulayama, either way, many people are coming, and therefore that either way it's considered a hesped dirachim. So either because Rafram himself is a distinguished Talmud Chacham, people are coming in his honor, or maybe his daughter was herself, his daughter-in-law rather, was a Balas Maisim, or whatever the reason would be, so people would be coming in her honor, so that would also be a valid reason for it to be a Hesped Derafim. Another example, Rish Lakish Safi Vahut Sovim and Abban, Shiach Ba'arad Yisrael, Rish Lakish made a Hesped for a young Talmud Chacham who was commonly found in Eretz Yisrael. So in other words, apparently he didn't live in Eretz Yisrael full time. He traveled back and forth, but a lot of times he was in Eretz Yisrael. To have a Tony Hilchsa, this young Talmud Chacham would teach halachas, to teach him, Rashi says means Mishnayos, to Talmidim with 24 rows of Talmidim in front of him. So Rish Lakish considered him important enough to make a hesped for him because he taught that many people. The Rashba gives a different explanation that it means that when the hesped was made, Rish Lakish had 24 rows of people sitting in front of him listening to the hesped. So therefore, it was considered a hesped dirah. Omar, and he said in his hesped, Vai, woe, chasra, Eretz Yisrael, gavra rabba. Eretz Yisrael is now lacking a great person. This great person who taught like this is now lacking from Eretz Yisrael. On the other hand, the Gemara tells the flip side of it. There was a person in Babel who knew by heart the halachas, meaning all the Mishnayos, and Sifra, which is the Medrash halacha on Vayikra, and Sifri, which is the Medrash halacha on Bamidbar and Devarim, and Tesefta, which is the Tesefta for the that you find in the back of the Gemara, that clarifies the Mishnayos. Veshachiv, and then he passed away. Also, were Omer Leiler of Nachman, so they came and told Rav Nachman, Lispidei Mar. Rebbe, come give a hesped for him. Omar, so Rav Nachman was not impressed. He said, Heichi Nispidei, what kind of a hesped should I make for him? Hey, son of the Moli Sifri de Chaser, should I say, whoa, where is that basket of books that's gone? In other words, the guy, because he knew all these Mishnayos and Braises and all, but he didn't learn Gemara. Gemara is where you learn the actual halachas from. Because when you learn Mishnayos and Braises, you never know. I mean, you have the meat and potatoes of the Gemara, as you find there's a contradiction between this Mishnah and that Braisa, or the Mishnah, and you have to determine what the actual halacha is, and so on and so forth. So this guy only knew the Mishnayos and the Braises. So Rav Nachman says he's just like a basket of books. Like, okay, he had a good memory, but that's not a reason to make a hesped on him. It's a funny thing, by the way, that nowadays we use that same expression, Sana Demoli Sifri, as a compliment. We say about it, you often find in Igros Kodesh and in other letters between Talmid Chachamim and all, you find that they used Son of the Mole Sifri as a compliment that the person knows so much Torah. So that here, Rav Nachman is using it almost as an insult, but it turned eventually into a compliment. Maybe there's a difference between that. Anyway. So the Gemara says, Tochazi Mabin Takipi Da'arid Yisrael Lachsidi Debavo. Come see the difference between the tough people of Eretz Yisrael and the Chassidim of Babo. Namely, Rish Lakish was the Takip of Eretz Yisrael. Rashi refers to a Gemara that we learned a while back in Yuma that says that Rish Lakish wouldn't just speak with anybody. Rish Lakish was very selective who he would speak with. So he's attacked even Rabbi Baba Chana. He wouldn't speak with him directly because he considered him like not like like beneath his caliber. And still, we see that when the Talmud Chacham who taught Mishnayos to 24 rows of Talmidim passed away, then Reish Lakish made a hesped for him. On the other hand, Rabbi Nachman is the chosid of Babel, as you have the example at the end of Masechta Sota when the Gemara says over there, Mishmes Rebbe Batla Nov of Yirashet. And Rav Nachman, in a later generation, says to the Tana in his yeshiva, don't learn that phrase in the Mishnah, because I'm still here and I have Yirashet. So we see that he was on that level. And yet we see that he put down this person who learned Halacha, who learned Mishnayos, and so on and so forth, and said that he's not really worth that much if he can learn Gemara as well. We'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, we'll continue with that discussion about halachas and about what the caliber of different Talmid Chachamim is. Yeah.